Okay, thanks very much, Nick, and welcome to the people in the hall, and also a big welcome to the people on the internet watching. This is our regular Wednesday night meditation. And as we usually start off to let you all know, is that we've started to do this really to support our care group too, because we have our telephones, our care group phones are all manned tonight, or manned or womaned tonight. So we have people now actively waiting for your call or listening already to people. So if anybody would like to call, doesn't matter where you are in the world, you can call. There's a number at the bottom of the screen that you can see, and we'll be here until 9 o'clock tonight to take your calls and to just talk over anything you might want to talk about, really. So this happens now on Wednesdays, Thursdays and Saturdays, from around 6:30 in the evening until 9 o'clock at night. So you're always very welcome to call the care line. And I guess the other thing that we try to look at a little bit with the way that we run these nights is to really try and run them in tandem a little bit with the way that the listeners that are on those care lines, the way that they've practiced and trained to be with you. So, you know, they've been trained with listening skills, because indeed listening skills are very rare in the world, to be quite frank. It's very rare for people to really listen to one another. But when somebody is listening to you, you really do know, don't you? You know, you can always tell when somebody is really listening to you, because in fact, it's a sort of an act of loving, really, in a way. In fact, wanting to be with you, wanting to form relationship with you, and indeed, when somebody is open to do that, it really is quite special. Because for most of us, me included, sometimes when you're talking to somebody, you can hear what they're saying, and you know that they might be in a bit of trouble, but your mind sort of very often just races towards, oh, they could do this to fix that, or you could fix that by doing this. You know, why don't you do this? All of these kind of things come up in your mind. And it's very, very hard often just to still that, just so that you can just be with somebody and just let them speak in a normal way without sort of trying to take over the conversation, without trying to fix them. As Ajahn Brahm often mentions here, it's really a matter of not trying to cure people, but caring for people. And this is why we've called it the care group. So we do try to practice that, and as I was saying last week, we, in that caring process, we try to practice, when we're on the end of those telephone lines, we try to practice the four Brahma Viharas. You know, that's in the naturalness of compassion that we all have, being able to cultivate that, and then the practice of metta, loving kindness, to be able to practice that, and then this other factor of medito. Medito is a wonderful quality to have, because it's a quality where you are really celebrating or being with somebody else's good fortune, goodwill, and sharing the joy that that might be that the people might be feeling. And if you can do that, it means that you can sort of let go of yourself and really be with that joy and celebrate and get really the same benefit from that happiness and joy that the person is actually experiencing. So this medito is really a very important Brahma Vihara, because it does allow you to let go, or it has that quality of letting go, so that you can just be with and share other people's good fortune and happiness. So tonight, I'd like to talk a little bit about mindfulness again. Mindfulness is really always a big subject in the Buddhist world. course, very important. It is a factor of the Eightfold Noble Path, so it's a quality that we do all try to practice very much. But tonight I'd like to sort of point a little bit more towards what happens when you can mature mindfulness, when mindfulness becomes more mature in your mind. And when that happens, you can really start to see some quite subtle benefits that are there all the time for us, really, in our minds. But we can start to share and understand just what it's like to be more close and more balanced into the present moment. Because, you know, as we've been hearing here for the last few Wednesday nights now, this present moment, of course, is really where we try to be with when we're doing meditation. And indeed, when we practice here, we're trying to cultivate this present moment, the awareness of the present moment, right into to the depths that we can possibly see it, because we understand that this present moment is really the only place where there is reality. We can we all know, once we contemplate a little bit, we can see that the past is finished. It's dead and gone, really, the past. I mean, we can learn from the past, but essentially, the past can also be sometimes a problem from people. So oftentimes there's a lot of depressions and things like that, or you're trying to relive some sort of experience that never really... It's really difficult to do that when you try to do that. I remember once, just with that in mind, I went to have a look at the Grand Canyon. And it's just the first... And you kind of, when you come up onto the Grand Canyon, as people would know, especially the people in America, no doubt, that's been there, you come up in a fairly flat... It's a very flat environment. And then all of a sudden, you sort of get to the edge of this canyon, and it's kind of like... It just takes your breath away. It's overwhelmingly the experience of just seeing that. But I can remember from that first time that I did that, I spent the rest of the visit there, which wasn't too bad anyway, just doing this, but I spent the rest of the day that I was there just trying to relive or find that same experience of just looking to see that. I mean, there was plenty to see there. I'm not sort of saying it was a bad thing, but that very first look, you know, when you're with it, but then to try and relive it, to try and re-experience it is very difficult. You know, it's never really quite the same as when it's fresh and when it's unique, the first time you see something. And this is probably too why oftentimes you know, we think of sunsets, and then we take a photo of a sunset, and then you take another photo, and we're always trying to sort of better the first experience, but it never really quite works like that. But that's what happens when we try to hold on to the past, when we try and hold on to it rather than just letting ourselves be present in the moment, so that we can be fresh and vibrant and so that everything is new and wonderful, wonderful, you know, full of wonder. And so you have the past, and then also the opposite of the past is the future, of course, but then when we have expectations into the future, or we want to kind of make the future better, when we've got those expectations there before the future really comes, well, then we are always sort of trapped and caught. We're never really able to fully, again, just be with the present moment when we're moving into the future, because we have expectations or ideas that we want to sort of add on to the experience. And you know, in my experience with this anyway, you usually do find that contaminates it a bit. It contaminates the present moment. But when you're kind of got that presence there in the moment, there's really something quite special about the present moment. And this meditation that we do, as we practice the meditation and what the Buddha was teaching to for us to understand this present moment, is really, you know, that it is, in a way, where reality is. And when you contemplate that, and I would invite you all to do that very, very deeply if you can, just to contemplate that, because, and to see the truth of it, because the only thing that we've ever really got is just this present moment that's real. And when you start to see things that way, you start to see that mostly our lives are kind of lived in a kind of a blur across the present moment. We never really quite get that refined way of seeing and the refined understanding that can be there when the meditation is really, really good. And when you start getting down to see some of the wonders that this meditation and uncovering the present moment can do for you. Because it is it can be a beautiful thing, you know. When you start to think about even the things that the experiences that are taught in the way of jhana experiences, just where you can absorb completely into the present moment, absorb completely into the stillness of your mind, and there, that's just sort of introducing now the stillness that's there. And we've been talking a lot about that over the last few weeks too. And indeed in the meditation here, we do try to point to that. I'm sort of all the time, and Louisa too, is always trying to just point, you know, look at this, look at the stillness, look at the wondrous nature of it, because sometimes we just never quite stop or still our minds long enough just to notice how beautiful it is, just how wonderful it is. And that's really a bit of an introduction into what I wanted to talk about tonight, you know, as we look towards maturing this mindfulness that we practice to have. You know, hopefully, eventually, we can bring this mindfulness into a 24-hour cycle of every day, so that we're present with ourselves all the time. And that's very possible, to have that stillness of mind with you. And just as Ajahn Chah used to talk about, Ajahn Chah is really the monk that the Buddhist society went to first ask for monks to come. Ajahn Brahm is a disciple of Ajahn Chah. And he talks about the practice of knowing what's apparent, so knowing what's apparent in the world here, but also to know at the same time, to know the transcendent, so that you can actually see the way that the mind works when you're kind of looking deeply into it, as we've talked about a little bit too on some Wednesday nights before, where you can see how things do begin and end right in the heart of the present moment. And this is what Ajahn Chah was talking about when he was talking about seeing the apparent, but also at the same time to see this transcendent, which is really just the stillness. And the stillness can be seen in many ways. It can be, you can understand this as yes, certainly still consciousness, and that's the way that I basically like to see it, as consciousness, being conscious of the stillness. But then it also goes to spaciousness. You could kind of think about it in terms like that, just even the space that's in this room, or the space that's in this universe, the space between the stars, the space that makes up all of the vacuum, but even the space between those exotic particles that are in between, the exotic particles that are in the atmosphere itself, and you know, seem to be completely filled up. Just even, you know, if you look at the halls and the walls in this hall, you know, we know that if we kind of use a scanning microscope, we can sort of see deeply even into the bricks, and you look at the bricks and there's space in between all of the atoms and everything that makes up the bricks. This space is really everywhere in the universe, is spaciousness. And really, and you start to sort of see and understand the way the Buddha was talking and teaching about this, with the way that he talked about the second and the third noble truth, the way that things, the way that conditions begin and then where they end. So all this truth is really right there for us all to discover and find in the present moment. And we do that by being mindful. It's being mindful so that our minds can follow and stay with the present moment without sort of getting lost, without sort of getting lost in that kind of stream of consciousness that's running through, that contains all the time that we have and contains all of the conditions of the world. When we get caught up in all of those conditions and we're kind of moving with this stream of consciousness like this, but when we're still, we're coming back into the stillness so that we can look out and notice this stream of consciousness. We can see, rather than being caught in the movement of the universe, we're training ourselves to be present in the stillness so that we can look out and see it. And you'll find that you can live your life very beautifully in that way, because you're always present. You've always got that opportunity to make wise choices. And not only that, because these Brahma-Viharas start to come large for you as well, when you're kind of able to practice that, you're always able to get the best out of life that you can in the way that the Buddha did. But I wanted to because the Buddha was talking about enlightenment. I wanted to tonight, though, just to sort of talk a little bit about what the Buddha called the seven factors of enlightenment, because the very first factor of enlightenment is really this mindfulness. And I'll just run through the seven for a start, because there's the first one is mindfulness, and then there's investigation. So it's the way that the mind can investigate and understand these things. And then there's the energy that comes from that. Energy is always talked about. The Buddha always had that in many of the lists that he made, the talks that he gave. He always talked about understanding how the energetic balance of ourselves. It's a factor that's in the Eightfold Path, right energy, as part of the meditation process. But just about all of the lists that he ever made, he's always got energy there as a beautiful balance. It's certainly in the five hindrances that he talked about for meditation. We have five hindrances that stop you from becoming peaceful. That's restlessness and sloth and torpor, the third and the fourth hindrance, are always oftentimes a factor for us. But when that becomes nicely balanced, when we are able to be present and balanced nicely in our meditation, and the first two hindrances, that's desire and aversion, are the first two hindrances, but when they're nicely balanced as well, then there's contentment in your mind. The mind's nice and content. And then the energy comes good, because the restlessness and your tiredness balances out. So you have this balanced contentment. And the more you can have that balanced contentment, then the fifth factor of the hindrances, which is doubt, that starts to lessen then too, because you start to be able to sit with the moment and understand just what it means. So energy is important. But then the fourth factor the factors of enlightenment is joy and rapture and beauty. And this is one of the most wonderful things, I think, when you really do start to get involved with the present moment. You see these beautiful emotional kind of experiences very, very easily as your mind becomes more subtle and can really start to pick up on the beauty and the joy, and it's really because you're starting to get to truth. You're starting to get right to where the truth is. So these things just naturally come up. And then the fifth factor is tranquility. So just the way that the mind tranquilizes very naturally. We're not using any drugs or anything like that to tranquilize ourselves. We're just using the the presence of mind, the meditation that we're doing, the anapanasati, to bring on the tranquility. And then when the tranquility starts to come along, then our mind can easily concentrate. So we're able to sort of go deep down into the depths of the present moment to really understand what's there. And I know that sometimes, you know, you hear when people are sort of doing that too, just going deep into the present moment, because it can sometimes often be a bit scary. You do hear of these fearful stories about all of that. But when these seven factors are practiced in a way that's balanced, it's really quite beautiful to see, because, you know, that beauty and the joy comes up, and the whole thing starts to work to remove the fear, any fear that you might have. You know, oh, I don't want to go down there. I'm starting to lose myself down here. It's too scary. You can really find yourself wanting to go down there because it's so rapturous, so beautiful, so joyful of an experience. And then the seventh factor here is equanimity, which is always gets a run. Equanimity always gets a run in Buddhism, because this is really where everything starts to work and balance together. So that's just the seven factors of enlightenment. But just coming back to the first one, mindfulness. Mindfulness is really like it is the balance point. If you look at these seven factors of enlightenment, mindfulness is, if you like, it's the fulcrum. And then the second, third, and the fourth factor, which is investigation, energy, and the joy and the beauty that comes, you can say that these factors are really like the active part. I really like the way that this comes out too, because that's the active part of what we're doing when we're investigating something, when we're going deep to look, just to see, because the Buddha always encourages us, you know, never take anything that he says at just face value. Always check it out, look to see for yourself, because you've really got to know this for yourself. If you don't know this stuff for yourself, it just becomes another dogma. So if you really want Buddhism to work well for you, we really do need to make sure that we understand it for ourselves, and we can really see, you know, what's being talked about, to see if it's right or not right. But this active side of the balance, if you like, because you've got mindfulness in the middle, and then you've got this active side with the investigation and with the energy that's sort of flowing right, and the joy and the beauty and the just that wonderful experience that you have. That's all on the active side of it. But then on the other side of that balance, there's the fifth, sixth, and seventh, which is tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. And this is really more the passive side of the equation. And I quite like that, because in a way I can kind of see how, you know, in there, because we as humans, I think, have this ability to use our intellect, but we can't really use it too much. You know, we've got to balance it with our emotions, with our heart. So getting the heart and the head together is really, it's in a way what this is more or less sort of teaching us to do. With the active side, you know, more aligned with the intellectual side, and then the passive side sort of maybe going more to what we're feeling emotionally. That's not always the case in here, because certainly the joy and the rapture that comes about is certainly a very emotional experience too. And there's kind of mixtures of intellect and emotions in both of these things. But just the way that this whole thing sets out, it's, you can sort of see it like on a balance, with the active side and then the passive side, and right in the middle is this mindfulness, where we're trying to bring this mindfulness to bear in the present moment so that we can understand that present moment. So these seven factors, I think, give a good understanding of just what it is that we, you know, what it is to sort of direct us towards the pathway to being enlightened, and just gives us some idea too of just what enlightenment is. Because as I was sort of saying, and just coming back to really what I think the topic of this talk is really, is when we start to make mindfulness mature, when we start to mature with mindfulness, we're able to allow ourselves to be much more subtle, to allow the mind to be much more deep, concentrated, and so that we can get to the subtlety of just what is there in the present moment. Because this life sort of pulls us out so easily. You know, it can, when we're sort of caught up in the extremes of life all of the time, we're right out here and we're kind of in the extremes, it's very, very dominant in our minds. It's very easy to sort of get caught in that, because it is quite exciting. It's exciting when you do very exciting things, you know, like, as I've mentioned before, maybe climbing up Mount Everest, or, you know, doing these spectacular acrobatics or things like that, you know, doing dangerous things even, you know. So, whenever we get into these extremes, though, there is always, as we've talked about here many times before, there's always the opposing side of that there. There's always a duality to anything that we want to look at in that way. You know, so if there is a whole lot of excitement out here, well, then the opposite side of that, you know, just dullness and boredom is probably, you know, that will be there, and as soon as that comes, you know, you'll want to kind of get back to the excitement again. So we're constantly then starting to grasp at and sort of trying to get to the excitement side rather than understanding what boredom is too. And you sort of, you know, I see that in myself sometimes, you know, you kind of maybe just sitting around and just totally bored, and I'd hate this boredom, what am I going to do? And then you just turn on the telly maybe, and then the boredom's gone. But to be able to sit and just understand boredom, just to be with boredom, it's actually not so bad really. And certainly as you start to use the what I'm talking about here, using your mindfulness to be able to sort of penetrate into it, you start to see that even boredom itself, there's a beauty there. It's a kind of just the beauty and the subtleness of the way that we might experience it. You can really start to see just and want to be with just having the mind still, because the stillness is just so wonderful to sit with, to be with. So as this mindfulness does start to become more subtle and more penetrative, as we're starting to penetrate deeper into the present moment and sort of seeing and being with the stillness that's there, we can really start to understand what the Buddha was talking about when he was pointing to this place. Because we are, it is really a place of peace. You start to really understand what it means to be peaceful, and at the same time, you really start to understand the first noble truth of just what dukkha really is. Because dukkha is I know that there's a couple here tonight that are maybe fairly new to Buddhism and maybe don't know about dukkha so much. But for those of us that do, the dukkha is the first noble truth that the Buddha talked about in in the very first teaching he ever gave. He gave the four noble truths, and the first noble truth is that everything, all the conditions of the world, including the universe and everything, everything that our minds can go to in the way of a condition, they have this duality, they're caught in this idea of you know, one thing happening. It's just this dukkha, maybe the happiness this side, but if there's happiness going to come here, we can only really know happiness because we know what sadness is, we know what bitterness and trouble is. So this dukkha is really, I think it's very difficult to understand, actually. And I keep on taking my hat off to the Buddha whenever I kind of see that he's kind of used this as the very first thing that he ever uttered, really, about what he'd discovered, that everything in the world is dukkha. It's sometimes difficult to understand why, because you can sort of say, well, you know, everything in my life's not dukkha. I mean, there's some things that I really enjoy doing, some things that I don't like doing too, but life, you know, on the whole, and especially for us here in Australia, it might seem like it's pretty good. We've got a bit of COVID happening, but it doesn't really affect us that much, really. We could still, you know, have pretty good lives. We've got good governments that look after us, and people are generally very happy. So you can lose the sight of what the Buddha was talking about with this dukkha. So it's really only when you start to go deeper into the balance point that you can start to see the just what is there in the balance and the beauty is when everything sort of comes in close into that present moment, right into the heart of the present moment. When you start uncovering it, you start looking deeper and deeper into it. And then when you can find yourself being able to absorb into the stillness, when you can absorb into that stillness to really just see how much fun it is, how truthful it is. You know, you really start to see the way this universe is, the way that it's made up. But most importantly, out of all of that, most importantly, you start to see that this universe itself is nowhere else but in your mind, in my mind. So my universe is what I'm observing out here as I look out into this hall and see this, what apparently seems like an external world to me. I can gradually start to see as I look into my mind that's really a delusion. This is what the Buddha said. Everything that I'm seeing out here is really in my mind. And it is the same for you, you know, when you're looking back at me and you're looking back the other way. What you're experiencing is your world, your universe. And really, in the end, it's down to each of us to make each of our universes peaceful. We're responsible for our own world, in a way. I mean, there's going to be always things that you can't really do anything about, because the nature of the connectedness of everything in the world means that we're going to have people that will cause us grief and trouble. But by and large, and certainly in a country like Australia or any of the countries where there, well, it doesn't really even matter, even where there's war, it doesn't really matter what the country is, what's happening inside the country, there's always the opportunity to be peaceful. And if you can start to understand and see that this world really is inside our mind, then you know that you know where your work is. You know what you need to do to make your world work for you. You realise that you're not just a helpless pawn being pushed around. You can actually make a difference in your universe, make your universe peaceful. And this all comes about when we start to understand these things and start to look at those balance, but the balance of mindfulness. Mindfulness is such an important thing. And then noticing when mindfulness matures, as you start to go deeper into this mindfulness, you start to really notice these subtle qualities and the fact that, quite literally, the world is this universe comes from our mind. This is a The very first verse in the Buddha's Dhammapada says that mind is chief, mind is the forerunner of all things. So the mind kind of creates it all, and we fall into the delusion of believing that this world is a separate place, something that's external from us. But I mean, even with that, once you look back even at some of the physics that's being uncovered now, all this is starting to point to this. The quantum mechanics, it's all starting to point to this as well. Certainly Einstein's work. Sort of Einstein realised that he could cross the universe in no time at all if he rode on the back of a photon. A photon of light can cross the universe in no time. So this is when Einstein was thinking about this. This is how he came up with the theory of general relativity. So there's a lot of support that sort of shows. Not that you need support, because I mean, when the Buddha was talking about all this, he said that everything that he had seen and understood in this world was all seen in his fathom-long length of body. In his own mind. But these things they're not easy necessarily to get your head around all of the time, but that's why we need to have this mindfulness going, so that we can start to see, the connections, to see how it all works, and to be able to penetrate into the subtlety of things. So in tonight's meditation that Louise is going to lead for us, I hope that we can start to understand some of that too, just to understand, and maybe even and Louise, I think, is all G'd up, ready to sort of bring us the stillness and hopefully point to it, so that stillness is there. And it is something that's there for you. Once you realise that your mind is not moving, and that's a fairly simple thing to do. Once you can see in your meditation that your mind isn't moving, just notice what that's like. What's it like when your mind doesn't move? And then you start to get an idea of what contentment is, because you're not trying to grab, you're not trying to move one way to get something or move the other way to push it away. You're just being very content, and it's a beautiful place to be, just with that contentment of mind. And as that contentment starts to be there and you kind of start realising your breath, you're watching your breath flowing in and you're watching your breath flowing out, and you've got that contentment there, and then all of a sudden you will start to notice what this stillness is like. It's there all of the time, the stillness. It's never ever not there. And when it starts to become very apparent for you, you will be able to sort of see that people talk about it as like the sound of silence. And in the Zen tradition, they talk about the roar of silence. So see if you can notice that. Just notice that in your mind. Just what do those people mean when they talk about the roar of silence? Just the stillness. I mean, I've mentioned this before, when you get a shock, when something happens, a car accident or something like that, this is really when your mind does sort of come to one point very, very, very precisely, very carefully. And as I've said before, there's stories about that when people do go into a shock. Very often they'll find that they'll talk about, the stillness was deafening. Even in car accidents, where there's so much external noise, crashing of metal and screeching and tearing of metal and all of that, but just that noise, that absolute terrible noise. But past all that, when the mind's focused, these people too will describe the silence is deafening. A mate who crashed his car said that, as he's describing all this terrible noise with the screeching this tearing of metal and everything, but he said the silence is deafening. So try to look at that, try to look and see that roar of silence as Louisa is guiding us through this meditation and guiding us into what Louisa is especially good at, I think, is really just working with the metta, with loving kindness, sort of being with the mind and enjoying that whole process. So with those few words, I'll hand over to Louisa now, who'll to guide us in tonight's meditation.
Thank you all for coming, and thank you, Dennis, for enlightening us about the seven factors of enlightenment. Now, how to put this in practice. It's our fifth collaboration, and every time you come up with a new talk and new points. And as I was walking tonight here, I saw a bowl outside in the kitchen area, and it had Easter eggs in there. And I came up with this idea that this is going to be like an Easter special meditation session. Why? Because the next few days, most of you might have these at your home, whether you like it or not. I'm not a particular fan of them, but we can work with them. How? Last week we spoke about the Brahma Viharas, today about the seven factors of enlightenment, and there's these points on them, and like I can't recite them. I have to have a piece of paper there, and then I just give up. So why not just focus in the next few days, when it's Easter, the long Easter weekend, on maybe one or two things that you would like to cultivate within yourself with the help of an Easter egg. Like when you come in a space and before you eat it, before you grab one or you are offered one, or even if you don't have them, any candy that you're eating in the next X amount of days. You may remember this, you may remember what I say, you may not. That's okay, or it may come in later. But then just stop for a moment, just stop, rather than stop. And that's point one, mindfulness, right there and then. And then from there on, you have that power and that choice to either anyway eat it or apply Buddhism, any of the four Brahmi Viharas or seven enlightenment factors. For example, you have this in your hand, and before you open it up, you just apply, if you want to practice a bit more love and kindness, so in your head, you sit with it. Not too long, because it will melt, but maybe 15 seconds, I think, should be a good time. Oh, I was just listening to a talk of Ajahn Brahm, and he said, compliments really kick in after 15 seconds as opposite to criticism. So give it a good go, 15 seconds for those who are structural in their minds and need a procedure, 15 seconds, and just, you know, maybe twice or repeat for yourself that you want to wish someone well, and someone, you know, try to challenge yourself, maybe someone that you don't necessarily like. And if that is too hard, you can rephrase it like we spoke about last week, and as Venerable Hasapanya rephrased it as well, you can want to be able to wish that person well. So it's still more sincere. And well, there's more than one Easter egg. And you can also just give that to yourself. Maybe give it to yourself first, like, may I have the capability or find the capability to be peaceful or to be more kind to myself. Something like that, the may I part. And yeah, so in that way, you can apply Buddhism over Easter. You don't have to be a Buddhist, just have to have some candy nearby. And it's also, yeah, we'll work after Easter, obviously. but thank you for whoever dropped them here. So with that, let's start the meditation and let's see or feel where we can see the stillness. So enjoy yourself, make sure you're comfortable, if you have to move, if you have to have a drink of water, now is the chance. We won't be meditating too long, we won't be totally dehydrated, but in the next 15 minutes at least that's you're there. So yeah, and enjoy yourself. And if you have anything that you would like to share in person or on the YouTube in the comments, I would love to hear from you, or on the phone line, obviously open 3 days a week. Okay, now next 15 minutes is just for you. Thank yourself that you showed up, that you tuned in. Okay, and settle the body. If you're lying down or sitting, and breathe in and breathe out. And be aware of the space behind you. And breathe down in your belly. And be aware of where you're touching the surface. And see if you're well balanced. And if your balance is compromised due to health, you see yourself as being balanced, as good as you are. And with that breath, we go deep into the earth of where we are, and we acknowledge the land that we sit on, that we eat from. For West Australia, it's Whadjuk Noongar country, past, present and future and emerging. And with that, we walk down the path we're lucky to have found, path that we are lucky to share with our friends near us and on the other side of the world. We're in it together and alone. And alone you walk. You see yourself walking. You sit down. You sit down in this cave that you find where it is so nice and quiet. And it feels really, really safe. With this safety and calmness, and it has perfect temperature, you now allow yourself to drop in and wish yourself, may I be able to drop in. May I drop in silence and see what happens. Keep dropping. Let it go. If you're struggling, look and see where you're wanting to go. And look also behind you. And leave that and keep dropping. Keep going. does it look like? Maybe it has a color. Maybe it has a feeling. The feeling of silence, the color of inner peace. The next 5 minutes, just bathe in it, bathe in it, and enjoy. If you feel you've dropped out, wish yourself again and bathe in the space and the sound of silence. Can you hear the sound of silence? Doing really well. This is not a competition. You're doing well. from this place where you are now. Imagine holding an Easter egg. You look at it. What are you going to do with it? You're going to practice compassion and wish someone well, or yourself? Or will you remember to apply mudita to enjoy someone else's happiness? Or do you want to wish some love and kindness? Remember, you also do this for your own. Whatever you give out, you will get back. See if the joy arises inside of you. You challenge yourself to do this sincerely, in your own power, in your own abilities. You're growing and growing and growing. So with this, with this, we're slowly coming to an end of the meditation. Were you able to see some silence or to feel it? You see a color. No matter how long you did the right effort, you gave it a good go, and it's good enough. And keep practicing with no expectations. I'll ring the gong 3 times, and then we come out slowly, and then we can go to the kitchen for a chat and an Easter egg special. Thank you everyone for showing up and allowing yourself to feel joy, grief, happiness, pain, see colors, hear the sound of silence, and love to hear from your experience. You want to write about it or talk to us about it. And thank you to the donors who made this all possible. And much gratitude.
paid respects to the Buddha, but for those that want